first episode I recorded for the Trust Show podcast was done almost 3 years ago in May of 2021 and was titled Team Size Does Matter for Trust. And I kind of put the words team and for trust in parentheses, so it kind of left it with size does matter. Anyway, that's my sixth sense of humor. But in this episode, I'm going to revisit the topic of trust in team and teams in general, because I do get asked about that a lot. How do you build it and what does it mean? So in this episode, I'll talk about the importance of trust in a team. I'll talk about the team size, the optimal team size. I'll talk about building trust in a team. And I'll talk about what you do when you have a team member that cannot be trusted, at least not by the other members of the team. Right after this. Welcome to The Trust Show. I'm Yoram Solomon, your host, the author of The Book of Trust, and facilitator of the Trust Habits Workshop. My mission is simple. I want to help you form habits that build your trustworthiness, because the answer to this question will have the biggest impact on your personal and professional success or failure. Can I trust you? I'll start with the 1+1=3. When I did my doctoral research, I correlated multiple factors that would affect creativity and productivity in a company, in general in a company. And one of those components was team dynamics. That was the name that I gave it back then. I didn't call it trust. I didn't call it anything else. I just called it team dynamics. What I found was a correlation of 42.5%. So if we go from minus one standard deviation to plus one standard deviation, the level of creativity and productivity would go up 42.5% as team dynamics go up. The thing is, it actually had what's called the statistical significance of 0.055. And really, the cutoff to say that this is statistically significant is 0.05. So it has to be 0.05 or less than that. So academically, theoretically, I would say that it didn't meet that bar, but it's still a pretty strong correlation. And this is where I'll mention that there's a correlation, there's statistical significance. The correlation is pretty strong, 42.5%. It's just that I could not prove it beyond 95% of the cases. So it's really kind of 94.5%. But that's fine. There is a correlation. I did find a correlation between team dynamics, what I called team dynamics, and creativity and productivity in a team. So it is important. As over the years, so this was, I did that in 2008 through 2010. Over the years, I started learning that the thing that allows a team to be able to have creativity and productivity is really something that I call constructive disagreement. It's their ability to hold that kind of disagreement. So, disagreement is great, because this is how you get different opinions. This is how you think about things, or you get to think about things that you didn't think about before, because you have a team. This is where you're building on each other. And I call it constructive disagreement, and that's the type of disagreement where you can disagree and still stay friends, when you can be very passionate about it. And you know, it doesn't hurt relationships. It doesn't hurt your ability or willingness to participate. So I kind of put constructive disagreement on a continuum, on a range that starts in the middle. There is constructive disagreement, and that's the highest level of creativity and productivity. On the higher end of that scale is what I would call a destructive disagreement. This is where the level of disagreement gets to the point where it becomes personal, it becomes emotional, not passionate, emotional, and it becomes irrational. This is where people are stupid and not ideas are stupid anymore. That lowers the level of creativity and productivity, significantly lowers them. But there's a problem on the other side. And the other side is where we have what I call the politically correct disagreement. This is when we have the meeting before the meeting after the meeting, just not the meeting during the meeting. And you know what I talk about. This is where people don't say what they really think. They don't say what you need to hear. They say what they think you want to hear so that they don't get affected in any way. Well, I posed a question in one of my studies back in 2017. I posed a question about people's willingness to hold a constructive disagreement. Or what are their opinions or feelings about disagreeing with other people in their team? And I compared their answers across two different types of environments, the high trust environment and the low trust environment. In the low trust environment, people were 10 times more prone to say, disagreements are not effective. I don't like disagreeing. I try to avoid disagreements altogether. 10 times more, 61% of people in low trust environment said those three things versus only 6% in high trust environment. On the other hand, the other two options that were, we can disagree and it's not personal, or we can even passionately disagree and stay friends, those were 141% more in the high trust environment than in the low trust environment. So there's no doubt that having a high level of trust in a team allows you to hold constructive disagreement, which in turn allows you to be productive and creative, allows the team to be productive and creative. And this is where you get to the 1+1=3. There was another study done, I believe the same year, 2017 or 2015, by the same time frame. And that research, not done by me, was covering 102 different projects in different industries. And what they correlated was the effectiveness, the performance of projects in organizations, in project teams that had high trust versus project teams that had low trust. And what they found was that project performance in critical projects, in high performing projects, project performance went up 45% if the level of trust was high. So that's 45% better on time, on budget, and on specifications. 45% higher. Now, there are a lot of other things that trust has positive impact on. I couldn't actually, to date, find any reason why trust would have a negative impact on anything in the organization or in any relationship. So there are a lot of positive things, but those are the ones that would focus on the team itself, the trust in the team itself. And those are pretty significant consequences. By the way, if I go back to the constructive disagreement, the requirements for constructive disagreement or the, I'll call it the prerequisites, the conditions for the ability to have a constructive disagreement are one, that you're willing to be vulnerable. Two, that you're willing to give the feedback that the other person needs to hear, not what you think they want to hear. And three, that you're receptive to feedback. Okay, those three components. So I compared those across high trust and low trust environments. What I found was that in high trust environments, people are 240% more willing to be vulnerable than in low trust environment. What does it mean to be vulnerable? Ask stupid questions, suggest stupid ideas, not be afraid of what the other person is going to do with what you said. You know, it's when you are worried about what the other person is going to do with what you said that you start to hold back. And when you hold back, there's lower creativity, lower productivity. Well, that's one. The second one is feedback. The willingness to give feedback, and not just any feedback, it's harsh feedback. It's the feedback the other person needs to hear rather than the feedback that you think they want to hear. That willingness goes up 106% when trust goes up. And finally, it's the receptivity of feedback. It's the fact that you trust that the other person is really trying to help you. And if you don't think that when they give you feedback, they're trying to help you, then you're not going to act on that feedback. You're not even going to probably listen to that feedback. And your openness to that feedback, your receptivity, as I called it, is critical for, once again, creativity, productivity, and even individual development, personal development. That ability goes up 76% when trust is high than when trust is low. So once again, there are a whole lot of reasons of why trust is important to team performance, and therefore why trust is important to get the 1+1=3 rather than 1+1=2. Let's talk about team size. So one of my hypotheses was that the bigger the team size is, the less trust you can build there. That was a hypothesis. This was a gut feeling initially. Now it's supported by research. And, you know, I'm going to start with Robin Dunbar was a British anthropologist. And he studied multiple species, multiple mammals, I should say. And what he did was he correlated the ratio of the neocortex volume in the brain to the overall volume of the rest of the brain. And he correlated that to the group size, the social group size of different species. What he found was he found a correlation beyond statistical significance, and at a 95% confidence, he found that for humans, we are at about 147.8. That's the average size of our social network. He actually said that the 95% confidence would be anywhere between 100 and 231, but it's the same order of magnitude. It's not in the thousands, and it's not in the single digits. But there is another thing to consider, and that is there are different levels of trust that you would have in different groups. What is the level of size of trust that you have in the group of 150, like his average, Dunbar's average? Well, that would be what he refers to as casual friends. You know who they are. When you see them, you know, they typically bring a smile to your face. You ask them, hey, how's it been? And so on. But you're not in daily contact with them. I mean, those are not the people that you trust the most. Now, we can go bigger, wider. And it's like, how many friends do you have on Facebook? Well, I think I have like 4,000 friends on Facebook. And I use the word friends pretty loosely here because, you know, how much do I really know all of them? Or do they really know me? How much would I trust them, right? So let's go the opposite direction and start getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And the smaller it gets, the more you trust them. There's think about your family. Think about your closest friends. Do you trust everybody in your life as much as you trust the smallest group of five friends? Probably not. You know, one of the questions that I heard is... and it's a great question. Think about this. Ask yourself, how many people do I trust to help me hide a body? Right? Think about that. 150 people, 5,000 friends on Facebook? No, that's a very, very small and highly exclusive group of people. If you think about it, by the way, this is how military works. I mean, there is corps and there is a division would have about 1,500 people. Give or take different militaries, different divisions, different military units. Battalion has 500. Company has 150. Platoon, about 50. Squad, 15. But when you hear of a Navy SEAL team going somewhere, you hear about a team. That's five. Five people. For the Book of Trust, I interviewed... a former Navy SEAL and asked him about it. And you know, most of their actions were done in a small team of four or five. And there's a reason for that. So the smaller the team is, the higher the trust is. But why? Why does it happen? Well, think about several things. One is the bigger the group, I claim that there is a limited amount of trust that a person has to give. To place and it doesn't matter if it's trust that I place in myself, God, or you know, other people. We focus on other people here. There's another book that talks about the trust in God. And it's not the Book of Trust. I digress. You know that I get distracted very easily. But think about, so I do believe that the level of trust that we have correlates to the level of risk that we expose to in our lives. Because I really do believe that trust is related to risk. Risk is related to reward. So we want rewards. The more rewards we want to take, we want to get, the more risk we have to take. The more risk we have to take, the more trust we have to place in again, ourselves, God, or other people. Well, the bigger the team is, the more distributed that trust is. So if, I'll use numbers and I will say that the number of the percentage of trust, the amount of trust that I have to place in other people is 100%. Okay. Well, if there is a team of five, I'm one of them. That means that I have 25% to place in anybody other than myself. 25% is a significant amount of trust if the entire trust that I have is 100% or I have to put in other people. Think about this. The more people you have in the team, the less exposure you have to other members of the team. And if my trust model is correct, time and intimacy with other members of the team is what builds and accelerates building trust. And sometimes distrust depends on the other person's positivity. But the more time you have with another person, the faster you and the more you trust them. Well, if that's the case, the bigger the team is, the less time you have to spend with other members. You know, when I ran a business unit in TI and I had 89 people totally reporting to me, the level of trust or relationships in general that I had with each one of them was limited to how much I can spread across 89 people. But I had four who were directly reporting to me, and I have a much higher level of trust in them because there's less to split. So that's one reason why team size affects the level of trust. And, you know, if we're in a team of five and each one of us has 100% trust to spread amongst the others, the average in every relationship is 25%. But if we had a team of 10, and therefore the level of trust that I have to spread in the other nine is only 11%, and the same applies to everybody else in that team, then the average level of every trusting relationship in that team is 11% compared to 25% if the team size was five. Okay, you following me so far? So you get less exposure to people, and therefore you have a lower level of trust. The last thing is, and I'll get back to that. I'll talk about the bad apples and the one member of the team that that screws things up in terms of trust. I'll talk about that later. But there is the one untrusted member of the team that does drag the entire team trust down. The bigger the team is, the higher the probability that there is a member like that. You know, you can even say that the broader the range of trustworthiness is, and, if the range is broader, that means that the lower end of that range is lower too. The range is bigger. That means that the lower end is lower as well. So team size does matter. I remember back in the early 2000s reading literature that talked about the ideal team size being between 5 and 8. I'm not going to challenge it. I would probably prefer to be on the 5 side of that range. But the team size does matter. So if you find yourself in a very large team, you may want to reduce the size of the team. So kind of spread it around, spread it into sub-teams, knowing that you have a limited level of trust within a smaller team. that you have to give, and therefore, if you're a member of a smaller team, then you have more to give to each one of those team members. So how do you build trust in a team? You know, in my workshops, I have different levels of workshops, and I build it as a pyramid with four layers. The lower layer is the, I'll call it the motivation. It's the, you know, people don't do things if they're not motivated to do them, if the effort is bigger than the motivation, the reason to do it. And so I find myself having to start with why is trust even important? But once that's explained, the next layer is the education part. What is trust? And that's made of two parts. What is trust itself? How does trust behave? And the second part is what makes one person trust another person? So I take you through the 8 laws of trust and the 6 components of my relative trustworthiness model. The third layer is how. This is the how you become more trustworthy, because you need to form new habits to change old behaviors and build your trustworthiness. Okay, so this is every single person has to work on their trustworthiness. But that's working on yourself. The top layer is how do you build trust? So first of all, a prerequisite would be the team you want to build trust in, whether you're the leader, the HR manager, or just any member of the team or anybody. If you want to build trust in the team, the first thing is you have to be trusted. So you have to go through the process of making sure that you are trusted and improving your trustworthiness among the rest of the team. This is kind of the old analogy of put your mask on first in an airplane. If the oxygen mask drop, they tell you put your mask on first, because only if you have a mask, then you can help others. If you don't have a mask and you suffocate to death, then you're not going to be able to help anybody else. So first of all, you have to be trusted. Then you can start building a trust in the team. So what's the process? The first process, obviously, is to identify the team. And when you identify the team, the way I do that is kind of a matrix, okay? So if there are 4 members of the team, probably including yourself, maybe not, maybe you are an outsider, then you put a matrix of 4x4. And there is obviously one diagonal that doesn't matter, and that's the trust that team member A has in team member A. I mean, this is issues for therapists. This is, we're not going to deal with this here. But you do care about relationships between every 2 members, and not just every 2 members, but in both directions. And why do you care about both directions? You care about that because, trust law number 8 says that the trust is a 2-person game. The level of trust that one person has in another person depends or is the product of the other person's trustworthiness and the first person's trustfulness. So it's not enough that you're going to be trustworthy. I have to be willing to trust people in general. And between 2 people, there are 2 relationships, 2 trusting relationships. The relationship of, let's say, between person A and B, the trust relationship in one direction is A trusting B, and that's the product of B's trustworthiness and A's trustfulness. But in the opposite direction, these 2 don't matter. All that matters is B's trustfulness and A's trustworthiness. And those are 4 completely independent variables. Yes, there is an indirect relationship between them, because if somebody's trustworthy, they're going to do something to the other person. There's going to be a certain behavior that could help the other person. I said could help the other person trust the first one more and therefore be more trustworthy themselves. So there is some kind of an indirect, 1 step removed, maybe 2 steps removed, or reciprocity between the 2 trusting relationships. But in general, they're independent. I can trust you without you trusting me. You can trust me without me trusting you. So the next step is going to identify the critical dependencies for the operation of the team. And that is typically, it's more applicable to bigger teams than to smaller teams, because in smaller teams, a team of 4 and 5 would be the highest performance team, but it would also mean that there is a very strong connection between every member of the team and all the other members. As the team goes a little bigger is when some relationships really don't depend on each other. So the first step is, in every relationship, identify in that matrix, identify the criticalness of the dependency between member one and member two. And again, separate the dependency that member one has in member two from the dependency that member two has in member one. Member one may depend heavily on member two, but member two may not depend heavily on member one. It's something to keep in mind. So the next step is you identify those dependencies. And from the get-go, the low dependency relationships, and again, it could be in one direction is low dependency, on the other direction is high dependency. The low dependency relationships, I want to say ignore them, but let's say de-emphasize them, deprioritize them. Prioritize where you have the highest critical dependencies. In one direction. The other direction needs to be treated separately. That's why it's a matrix of 4x4. That's why there is a box and there is a cell in that matrix for C dependence on A and a different box for A dependence on C, dependency. So the next step after you identify the critical dependencies is to identify the trust levels in that dependency. And really in just that direction of the dependency. So if we find a high dependency between C and B, we need to assess the trust that C has in B. Not that B has in C, that C has in B. And that allows us to work on a smaller number of relationships. Now, if the level of trust, so we already prioritized high dependencies and maybe moderate dependencies. Then the next level is the level of trust that exists in that relationship, in that direction. And we're going to take out where trust is high, is already high. Because, you know, if trust is high, that's not something you want to work on, right? If it ain't broken, don't fix it. So that limits your work to prioritize, first and foremost, high dependency, low trust. Then probably high dependency, moderate trust, and then moderate dependency, low trust, moderate dependency, moderate trust. And you know, that might already give you a handful of what you need to work on. Now, as you work on it, keep in mind that you have to work on individual relationships, individual trustworthiness. So if you identify that D has a high dependency on C and low level of trust, you need to work on C's trustworthiness in the eyes of D, not in the eyes of anybody else, because remember the third law of trust, trust is personal. The same behavior that would cause one person to trust you could cause another person to distrust you. So we work on an individual relationship, individual trustworthiness. You'll see we're not only working on trustworthiness, but I'll get back to that. So we have a low level of trust or low level of trustworthiness. We need to work on that in a specific relationship. And if once you apply the trust habits framework or seven-step process, you realize that step one is to identify one relationship. Now, odds are that the same behavior that would cause you to lose trust in one relationship would probably cause you to lose trust in other relationships, but not necessarily. So you do want to focus on one relationship. So first you identified the matrix. In that matrix of all team members, in that matrix, you identified the highest dependencies. Of the highest dependencies, you identified the ones with the lowest level of trust. And you take the trustee in that relationship, the person that needs to be trusted, and you work on their trustworthiness. Okay, that's how you build trust in a team. Identifying the critical dependencies is relatively easy. I mean, you know what each member of the team does, and you can simply ask, you know, in your work, who do you depend on? And by the way, this may vary over time. You know, as the project progresses, there's more dependency on one member, less dependency on another. So we have to keep in mind that that's a moving target. But for this point in time, for this moment in time, we want to focus on the critical dependencies, the highest, the most important dependencies. And the next step is really to define whether there is trust or there's no trust. There are two ways to look at it. When I talk about diagnosing trust, I talk about two things: symptoms that are the result of trust, and call it prerequisites, but those are really the behaviors that cause trust to be high or low. The behaviors are a little harder to measure. They're not hard to measure by themselves, but the thing is, you may be measuring something that the person that needs to trust doesn't care about. Or you may not be measuring something that the person who needs to trust does care about it. So this is where it becomes relative. So I wouldn't focus necessarily, at this point at least, on the behaviors, the six components of the trustworthiness model, the relative trustworthiness model, but I will focus more on the symptoms. So let's look at the person who's supposed to trust the other person and see how they behave with respect to that person. So I'll give you examples of how do you know that one team member doesn't trust another team member. Again, those are the symptoms. These are the outcomes. The outcomes of low level of trust. They don't include that member in meetings. They avoid disagreeing with that member because, you know, they're afraid. They don't trust the reaction to disagreeing with them. They talk about that member behind their back. They don't give the member feedback even when that member asks for it. They don't take any feedback from that member seriously. They would rather do things themselves than ask this other member. They're not willing to be vulnerable with this member. And there is a long list. I'm sure that you can come up with a long list of symptoms that one member doesn't trust another. So you have to start looking at those symptoms. By the way, I gave you examples for what happens when a peer doesn't trust you. But how about your boss? Your boss would micromanage you. If you see the leader or the boss, the really the manager of the team micromanaging another one, sometimes it even happens at the same level of peers, then you know that they don't trust them. If they tell them exactly how to do their work, if one member gives very detailed reports to the other member, maybe it's because they don't trust that giving them the summary would be enough and it might come back to haunt them. So there are symptoms, and the way you know what the level of trust is through those symptoms of whether one member has trust in the other or not. There is one more thing that I want to talk about, and that's the weakest link, like the TV show, The Weakest Link. You know, it would come as no surprise that the strength of a team or a team is as strong as its weakest link. I want you to think about this. We have a team of four of us. The four of us have been working together for, I don't know, the last 15 years. We know each other well. We know each other's families. We've done things together. We went through things together, some terrible things together. None of us is perfect, but we are at the point where we can really, really trust each other at a very high level. Then they drop a fifth member to our team. Oh, we need to add somebody to your team. Here she is, or he is. What do you feel about them? Well, I don't know them. Now, I'm not saying that they're bad. I'm not saying they're not trustworthy. But it's just like any technology that you're not willing to trust until somebody else tried it long enough or you yourself trust used it long enough to trust it. Same applies with members of the team, maybe even more so. So we don't trust that person, not because they're bad, not because they're not trustworthy, but simply because we didn't have enough time. And maybe it is because there is a personality incompatibility. Okay? So what happens to the team dynamics? I mean, if it was just the four of us and we've known each other for very long, we're very open, very trusting with each other. When I say very open, we're also very vulnerable with each other. You know, I'll tell you anything and I know that it's not going anywhere, frankly, because for the last 15 years, I've been telling you things and they didn't go anywhere I didn't want them to go. So we have a high level of vulnerability, our ability to give feedback, our receptivity to feedback. But then this new member comes in and I'm not willing to be vulnerable whenever that member is in the room with the rest of us. Even though I trust three of you very, very high, that one new member limits our trust. So I'm not going to call it the weakest link because it's really weakest link through the fact that they just joined the team. So having a member join the team has to be done in an accelerated way. Think about how the Blue Angels add members to their team and the process until they actually let that member fly with them and they trust that member. It's a process. It takes a while. So if you add a member to the team, you have to accelerate trust. You have to start working on it from day one on the trustworthiness of the new member. But sometimes the new member is, and not necessarily a new member, could be an old member that's a bad apple. And when I say it's a bad apple, there was research done on this term, bad apples, in a team, and what they found was that the worst behavior in the team drags the rest of the team, the behaviors in the rest of the team. When somebody joins the team being very, very cynical, it drives the cynicism of the rest of the team. So one member of the team can really drive the behaviors in the rest of the team. Now, what if that member of the team is not trustworthy, not because we haven't spent enough time with them, but really because there is a very strong personality incompatibility in that team that neither one is willing to change? Well, that's going to be a problem. So when you analyze the critical dependencies and the level of trust, if you find very low level of trustworthiness with one member, and it's not just by one other member, but by more than one member, we've got a problem here. Now, I should add that the weakest link may not just be the weakest link in trustworthiness. It can also be the weakest link in trustfulness. A member of the team, very trustworthy, not willing to trust people in general. Not just you, not just anybody individually on this team, but not willing to trust people in general. Well, that's going to limit vulnerability, feedback, receptivity. And as I said, you know, those are kind of intermediate behaviors between the trust that one person has in another and the trust that the other person has in the first one. That can be a problem as well, and that needs to be worked on. And I'm not going to talk about working on it here, but essentially, you need to work on trustfulness as much as trustworthiness if you see that coming across multiple relationships with the same person. Now, the final note that I'll make in this part or in general is that the plus one. And the reason I call it the plus one is because I have a series of mini books, five so far, called Can I Trust You? That's the general title of the entire series, but each one of them refers to a different role in the organization or in a relationship. One is made for salespeople, another for team members, leaders, project managers, consultants, and so on. And the subtitle in each one of those books is something that's like 70 plus one habits that will make you a trustworthy leader. Now, when I say 70 plus one, why don't I just say 71? I mean, You already know that I know that 70 plus 1 is 71. So why not just call it 71? Well, because the plus 1 is something that I wanted to emphasize that exists in every relationship. The plus 1 is what happens if you simply cannot trust the other person. There is, you know, there are things that can be mitigated. There are things that can be worked through in a relationship. Like, for example, when I found that my boss did not trust me as much as I wanted to be trusted, simply because whenever I tried to convince her with something, I would start with the bottom line, which is how I like people to start with me when they tried to convince me on something. She preferred for me to take her through the entire thought process and at the end reach the bottom line. And because I did it the opposite from the way she was used to, she did not trust me. That was an easy fix. That wasn't a strong personality incompatibility. I mean, it was strong enough to limit the trust she had in me, but it was easy enough for me. I had the willingness and the capacity to change it. So I changed it, and then she trusted me. But sometimes the lack of trust is due to a strong personality incompatibility that cannot be bridged. That neither one of the two people is willing to change to make this a smaller issue. When that happens, you will not be able to fix that relationship. This might affect the entire team. Now, I'm not going to say that one of them is right and the other is wrong. I'm not going to say the person that's not trustworthy is wrong, because maybe that same person is going to be highly trusted in another team. But again, trust is relative. Trust is personal. In this team, their behavior is considered not trustworthy. Not making them bad people. But they're not good for this team. And when you keep them there, for whatever reason, you're making a conscious decision to sacrifice team performance. And it's not just the objective performance. It's how good they feel being on that team. You make a conscious decision to sacrifice that to keep a member of the team. Because, frankly, because you're avoiding making a hard decision, a tough decision. And you're not doing anyone a favor. You're not doing the team a favor, because they're not going to enjoy. They're not going to be productive or creative. You're not making the company a favor, because the company will have a team that's less than optimally performing. You're not giving that member of the team that's not trusted, you're not doing them a favor, because they cannot be enjoying their work when they're not trusted by other members of the team or all other members of the team. You're making a conscious decision to sacrifice performance, creativity, fun, because you're avoiding making a tough decision. This is it for today. Let's see what we talked about. We talked about how important trust is to a team that creates the 1 plus 1 equals 3 versus 1 plus 1 equals 0.5. We talked about the team size and how that relates to trust. We're talking about where building trust in a team plays. We talked about the process of building trust in a team. Identifying critical dependencies, assessing the level of trust, remembering always that trust is relative. You have to look at every individual relationship by itself in one direction only. We talked about the symptoms of trust and distrust. We talked about what happens when you have the weakest link in a team and how it drags the team down. And the fact, I'll repeat that one more time, that when you keep a member in a team that's not trusted by the others, you're making a conscious decision to sacrifice creativity, productivity, and fun, and you're not doing anyone a favor. That's it for today. May trust be with you. This was The Trust Show. What would you like to know about trust and trustworthiness? Let me know and I'll answer it in a future episode. I would love to hear from you. Email me at Yoram@thetrustshow.com.
If you like this episode, subscribe to the show so you will automatically get notified when I release a new episode. Rate it. Write a review for this podcast, because those ratings help not only you, but also others looking for podcasts just like this. If you're looking for more resources to learn about how to build trust, be trusted, or know who to trust, look up my workshops, online courses, books, or go to my website, trusthabits.com. And remember that the answer to these two questions will have the biggest impact on your personal and professional success or failure. Can I trust you? And can you trust me? Thank you for listening or watching The Trust Show.